You want to turn to Genesis chapter 41. We'll be looking at that chapter tonight. I like those chapters that have about 15 verses. I can spend 2 or 3 minutes on a verse and still have plenty of time. This one's only got 57 verses. We may be here a while tonight. So, holy. On the heading in my Bible, it says Pharaoh's dreams at the top of it. This chapter is less about Pharaoh's dreams than it is about God's providence, like so many of the chapters that have led up to this. We see throughout the book of Genesis the way that God works in the world. But especially in these chapters with Joseph, we see how he works throughout the strangest of circumstances to still be able to accomplish his purpose. And we talked about the miraculous some last week. We see as Joseph continues to give credit to God that there is something miraculous about the ability that God gives these answers through Joseph. That Joseph is in a sort a prophet, just like his great-grandfather Abraham was called a prophet. He sees things that others don't see. He understands things that others don't understand. And it's through the power of God, because of his relationship with God, that those things are the case. And we looked at the closeness of his relationship with God back in chapter 39. But remember, all of these things that are leading through here, everything from Genesis chapter 3 with the fall of Adam and Eve, everything is leading up to God's plan to reconcile man back to Him. To get God and man together again. And so it is that these things have to happen the way that they do. And of course, one block upon another as we go through here. After Joseph told the baker and the butler their dreams, and the butler forgot about him, 2 more years passed. Imagine spending another 2 years in prison. Now, it seems that Joseph's position there in the prison may not have been too awful bad. He wasn't being beaten every day and things like that, apparently. So maybe he wasn't too bad off. He was in that position where he was helping the jailer, and so he was kind of getting some preferential treatment in that way. And so we see how God watched out for him even during the time that he was in prison. But even that, 2 years, locked up, not able to do what you want to do, not able to go where you want to go, not able to see who you want to see, or any of those things, it's still a frustrating prospect. But during this time, finally, at the end of this 2 years, Pharaoh has a dream. Well, actually, he has 2 dreams the same night. The first dream that he sees 7 big, fat, healthy-looking cows. And they come up out of the river, probably the River Nile, and they come up and they eat the grass that's there right along the river. You know, that's the best, the greenest, you know, it's wonderful grass there. There they are eating that grass. And after that, 7 sickly, skinny-looking cows come up. You ever seen those cows? You know, the one where you can count their ribs? And you know, you just tell by looking at them, there's something wrong with that cow. And they come out of there, and they stand next to the healthy ones, but they don't eat the grass. No, and instead of eating the grass, these sick cows, and I guess they're sick in more than one way, because cows don't usually eat other cows, but these seven sick cows eat the 7 healthy cows. They just devour them. And then Pharaoh woke up. That's kind of a nightmare there. You might wake up from seeing something like that. And after he woke up, he went back to sleep and he dreamed again. This time it was grain, 7 ears of grain on a stalk, and they were all just full and healthy. You know, have you ever seen an ear of corn, the difference between one that's nice and full and every row's filled up, and then over here you get this little sickly one that's got one here and one there, and they're just scattered a few on the cob. Picture that, you'll know kind of what Pharaoh was seeing. So he's seen this stalk, and here's this grain, and boy, it's just perfect. Now, he wasn't probably seeing corn, seeing how corn is from over here in the Western Hemisphere, and he was in Egypt, but probably some kind of grain a wheat of some kind, barley or rye or something of that nature. And similar thing, though. He sees all this full head of grain on there. Well, then, there's seven withered up ones. They're only half formed, and they're pitiful looking. You can tell, you know, just if you went over and blew on them, they'd fall over, you know, that kind of look. But then, those sickly ones, those withered up ones, eat, swallow up the nice, big, healthy looking grain. And so Pharaoh then woke up again. He's troubled by these dreams. I know I would be troubled by dreams like that too, if I, like Pharaoh, thought that dreams had some sort of meaning. And we talked about this some last week, that, you know, we have all sorts of crazy dreams, and we just pass it off as, well, you know, it's just a dream. But at this time, when God spoke to people through dreams, and we've seen God speak to Abraham through a dream, we've seen God speak to Jacob through a dream, we've seen Him speak to Abimelech through a dream, we've seen Him speak to another Pharaoh, possibly an ancestor of this Pharaoh, maybe even within the realm of possibility, I suppose, that it could be the same Pharaoh, considering how long people lived back at that time. But we've seen Him communicate through dreams before. So it wasn't superstitious. Now today, if somebody thinks their dream means something, well, that's just superstition, you know, you're dreaming it. It's just a dream. But at this time, it wasn't superstitious to think that a dream meant something, that it was some kind of a message, because sometimes it was. And so Pharaoh is troubled by this dream. He thinks there's some message, but he doesn't know what it is. And so he calls for his magicians. And now, of course, we want to recognize that a magician in Pharaoh's court in Egypt, some 4,000 years ago, was not like a magician that you might see on TV or on the stage today. These magicians believed they were doing real magic, that they were really performing these things. It wasn't an illusion. It wasn't just a sleight of hand. I'm going to hide the handkerchief over here and pull it out and stuff it over here. You know, it wasn't that kind of thing like we have magicians today. These were people who really believed they could perform miracles, and Pharaoh believed they could perform miracles. And he calls those magicians, the wizards, sorcerers, he calls them to him, and he also calls all the wise men from Egypt, and he tells them about his dream, but none of them can explain it to him. So he's more troubled than ever then by that. You know, Joseph was right. Remember when the butler and the baker said something about the dreams, and he said, "Do not interpretations belong to the Lord?" You see, all these wise men, all these sorcerers and magicians, they couldn't figure out what it meant because the answer hadn't been given to them. The interpretation of that dream that Pharaoh had belonged to God, and nobody else could just come along and say, "Oh, this is what it is." No. And so, finally, now the butler remembers Joseph. "Oh yeah, you know, I had a dream one time, and there was this guy in the prison, and he helped me understand what my dream was about, and it happened just like he said." And so he recounts the whole case of those events with him and the baker that had happened 2 years earlier. And so when Pharaoh hears about this, he calls for Joseph, "Bring him from the prison, bring him to see me." You think Joseph was a little nervous going to the king, going to the Pharaoh? I mean, would you be a little nervous if the president called you and to come see him face to face? And I don't know if they told Joseph what it was about. You know, the guy's got a lot of power, more power than our president, really. He was the Pharaoh. He was the king. He was the absolute authority over the entire nation. Our presidents may sometimes think they are, but they're not. But they actually were. You know, the king, the Pharaoh, he could do whatever he wanted to do. And so Joseph gets called before him. Joseph cleans up, changes clothes, goes to the palace. It's a big difference in environment there. He had to look the part to go to the palace to see the king, Pharaoh. So Pharaoh then explains to Joseph what the problem is. Nobody can interpret my dream. And so down in verse 16, again, Joseph says, it's not in me. It's not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace. God's going to answer the dream, not me. I'm not the one that has this power. It comes from God. So in verses 17 through 24, Pharaoh tells the dreams again. The only real difference is that he mentions in this account of it that after the skinny cows ate up those healthy ones, they looked just like they looked before they ate them up. You know, you'd think if a skinny cow ate a fat cow, that skinny cow would get big. But not these. They ate up those big fat cows and they were still skinny. They didn't gain a pound from it. Didn't help them at all. And he said they looked worse than any he'd ever seen in the whole land of Egypt. Now maybe that was just a little bit of nationalism there, thinking, well, Egypt's got better cows. But maybe it really was. Maybe these sickly cows just really looked worse than any cow he'd ever seen. Of course, I don't imagine being the Pharaoh that you get to see a whole lot of the sick cows. They probably don't bring those to show them to you. They bring you the nice, healthy ones to see. But still, he'd never seen a cow that looked as bad as these. And so, Joseph first tells Pharaoh, these two dreams you have, they're really just one dream. It's the same message, just repeated two different times in two different ways so that you'd get the message. And so he says that God is going to do something. So this isn't something that's in the past. It's something that's coming in the future. God's going to do this. And he's warning Pharaoh ahead of time. He is telling Pharaoh through these dreams what he's going to do. Well, that's nice of him. No, he doesn't have to do that. He's God. He can do whatever he wants and he doesn't have to tell anybody. But just like he warned Noah of the flood that was coming, just like he told Abraham to leave his country, just like he got Lot and warned him, got him out of Sodom and Gomorrah, God is warning Pharaoh. Now, we know that the Hebrew people, the Jews, the children of Israel, Abraham's descendants, they're God's chosen ones. So why is God over here warning Pharaoh about this? Why doesn't he tell Jacob about what's going to happen? Well, we'll see in a moment that one of the reasons for that, I believe clearly seen here, is that Jacob didn't have the power to do anything about it. You ever been in that situation? You know, there's always the danger of a nuclear war, you know, because there's nuclear bombs out there. But you and I, you know, we're not really in a position to stop that from happening. So if God was going to send a message to somebody today to stop a nuclear war that was going to happen next week, I don't think he'd call you or me. He would probably call a president or a senator or the head of national security of our country or maybe the head of another country that was going to be involved. He's not going to call you and me. Now, Jacob was a rich guy. Jacob was going to be the head of a mighty nation. There was going to be a mighty nation to send from him. But at this point in time, he's just a little bitty old tribe wandering around out there in the wilderness. And there's not much he can do about what's about to occur. And so God goes to speak to someone who can do something about it. And he uses one of Jacob's descendants, Joseph, his son, to help to present this message. So it's an amazing thing. Pharaoh is wondering about this dream. Joseph now tells him about it. Verse 26, the seven good cows and the seven good ears of grain are 7 years. Seven bad cows and seven bad ears of grain are 7 years, the bad years of famine. So he specifies, it's not just, you know, it's not the whole crime's going to increase. No, that's not it. It's not, well, there's going to be an epidemic of the swine flu. No, that's not it. There's going to be 7 years of famine here. Not an invasion of a foreign army, is it? No. But Pharaoh's dream is telling him there's going to be 7 good years, good crops, and then there's going to be 7 years of famine. That's a good thing to know, isn't it? Now, again, suppose today that starting this year, there's going to be 7 great years of harvests and then 7 years of famines. If God told me that, told you that, would there be a whole lot we could do about it? Well, I mean, you know, we might start buying up some canned goods to make it, you know, see what we could do. But that's about all we could do about it. We could try to provide for our family, but that'd be about it. But what if he warned Congress and the President, and what if they knew? Then there might be something they could do to help the situation. And that's why he's talking to Pharaoh. Pharaoh, as the absolute authority of his nation, is in a position of power to do something. Now, that's not to say that there's not anything that we need to do. There are a lot of things we need to do. But we need to do what we can do and not worry about the things that we can't do. Not worry about the things that aren't going to happen. Now, you know, we get all excited. Everybody goes, say, well, the preacher said there's going to be 7 years of famine coming. No, you know, we're talking about something that happened back in Egypt. Could it happen here? Sure. Could start this year. Could happen next year. Could happen 50 years from now. Might not happen. We don't know. But here's the thing. Pharaoh now knows what's happening, and he's ready now to be able to do something to help this situation. He knows 7 good years coming, then 7 bad years are coming after that. What are we going to do about that? Well, one of the things that Joseph tells him is that, well, notice in verse 29, notice, you know, God tells him at the beginning of or before the 7 great years begin. He didn't wait until the last year and go, you know what, next year there's going to be 7 years of famine. He gave him plenty of time ahead of time, plenty of warning ahead of time to be able to do something about it. And then in verse 30 and 31, these 7 famine years, Joseph says, they're going to be so bad. I mean, these aren't just lean years, okay? You know, lean beef is not such a bad thing. Skinny, sick beef is a different story. He didn't just see lean cows. He saw sick, skinny cows. He saw, oh, they were horrible looking things. These 7 years of famine are going to be so bad that everybody's going to forget about the good years. Yeah. We think about things like, in this country, like the Great Depression and the Dust Bowl and times when it was tough and people really struggled. And, you know, now people have been talking about the last couple of years, oh, it's so bad. It's like we're on the edge of another Great Depression. And yet, just this past week, down in Orlando, there were some people rioting at the Foot Locker because some new special limited glow-in-the-dark sneakers came out, and they were fighting over who was going to get to buy them. They're like $200-something a piece. $200-something a piece for a pair of shoes that glow in the dark. But it's the Great Depression. I guarantee you, during the Great Depression, people weren't rioting to get a pair of shoes unless it was because it was the only pair of shoes left and they needed a pair of shoes. It wasn't just for some collector's limited edition item. There's a different thing. So, as bad, you know, people thought, oh, how bad it is. It's not bad yet. It's not bad like that. And it's not bad like what they had coming in Egypt. These 7 years, they were going to be so bad that even though there were going to be 7 great years of harvest before that, people were going to forget all about the good years because it was going to be so bad. I like it the other way around. I like it for something so good that you forget the bad. But sometimes it can be so bad that you forget the good. And of course, then in verse 32, he says the reason the dream was sent to Pharaoh twice was because it was set. God has determined it. There's no going back. This is going to happen. Then Joseph gives Pharaoh a little friendly advice. Unsolicited, maybe, But after you've interpreted the king's dream for him and told him what it's all about, maybe you're in a position that you can give him a little advice. And so he says, well, Pharaoh, here's what you ought to do about this. You need to delegate a wise and discreet man to be over Egypt. Well, why a wise and discreet man? Well, you want a wise man because you want him to be able to be smart enough to take care of this situation and to handle it. You don't want somebody that's going to come bothering Pharaoh every 5 minutes with a question about it. You want somebody who's able to take some initiative and go out there and get the job done. Well, why a discreet man? Well, you don't want to go out there and cause a panic. You don't want to go out there and say, hey, everybody, big famine's coming. Run for the hills. I mean, you don't want somebody like that. You want somebody that's going to be discreet, somebody who's going to be trustworthy, who's going to take care of things, and that you can trust him to do it. And he says, here's what this person needs to do then. He needs to have some people that are throughout the land. The King James calls these officers over the land. Some of the other translations talk about overseers, or one talks about a commissioner. You know, I think of these as tax collectors. I mean, you know, here's what he says. You appoint these men to go all over the land of Egypt and to take one-fifth of the crop, 20% tax rate right there. We worry about if our tax rate goes up 1 cent on sales tax or so. You know, we worry about if it goes up, if it'll go up 2% or so. 20% tax on everything. Everybody's crop, 20%. And they're going to collect all that. These tax collectors are going to go out there and collect all the taxes. And during those 7 years, they keep doing that. And then in verse 35, it kind of indicates that maybe even it goes beyond that. Because he says in verse 35, and let them gather all the food of those good years that come and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh to keep them food in all the cities. So maybe it's even more than that 20% tax, but maybe he's saying we need to collect all the food we can get. So maybe when they come in with food, maybe they're going to buy up some more. Well, old Keynesian economics, government spending right here. You know, but get it all, get as much as we can get. Now tax them 20%, and then we're going to store up as much of the food from the good years as we can. And of course, the idea of this was that Pharaoh store it up under his command so that it'd be under his control when the time came. Now, I know that here in America, our history has taught us to be skeptical of strong central governments. And the idea of an absolute monarchy where a king has control over everything, we don't like that idea. But you know, when something like this needs to get done, that's the best system to get it done. God used what He had available, and He used this system, and He got it done. Because Pharaoh had the authority to do it. He had the power to do it. Jacob couldn't have done it. Joseph sure could. He didn't send the dream to Joseph. Joseph was in prison. If he started telling everybody, hey, I had this dream, everybody would have thought he was a lunatic. But Pharaoh had the dream. And then he called Joseph to interpret the dream for him. See, God works these things. He knows what He's doing. Well, the food's supposed to be saved up for that time in the 7 years of famine come. Now let's think about this. I don't know about you. I know how a lot of people do. Somebody at work, they're making big money, making minimum wage. And they get them a quarter an hour raise. So they go from $7.25 an hour all the way up to $7.50 an hour. You know, they go from making $56 a day to making $57 or $58 a day. I mean, $2 a day. They're making an extra $50 a month. You know what they go do? They go spend $100. They got a raise. We got to celebrate that. They're going to go out to eat, go to a movie, and they'll spend $100 to celebrate the fact that they got a $50 raise. And don't think it's just the people getting minimum wage that act that way. The executive, he's making $150,000 a year, $200,000 a year. He gets a raise, bumps it up, $25,000 extra every year. Goes out and buys him a $50,000 car. I mean, that's what people... So when these good years come, and these farmers see these bumper crops, what do you think they would do? Why, they're going to sell that, and they're going to get the money, and then they'll waste the money, and then guess what's going to happen when the famine comes? They're going to be hungry. Well, yeah, a lot of people are spendthrifts. They'll spend everything. Spend it all. Waste it all. Whatever. But, see here, Joseph brings Pharaoh a plan to keep that from happening. Another thing that we think about here is, I don't know if you've ever had a time in your life where things were going good and then they were going bad. Have you had a time like that in your life when you had good money and then you lost income and you didn't have as much as you used to? That's kind of hard to deal with because you're used to living right here. Now, if they had bumper crops for 7 years, well, when that first year of famine hit, boy, they'd be in bad shape, wouldn't they? But by this huge tax that Joseph suggests, those bumper years aren't going to seem quite so bumper. And so it's going, instead of having big, and then boom, down here, it's just going to be like this. It's not going to be as big of a drop-off. So there's a lot of wisdom to what Joseph said here. People won't be rioting in the streets in Egypt in 7 years like they would if Joseph's advice wasn't followed. Joseph's a wise fellow. He's gotten this from God, obviously, but he's a wise fellow too. He's smart. He's always been good with business. Remember how quickly he moved up in Potiphar's house? And remember even when he was thrown in jail, it didn't take long before he was at the top. He was the guard's chief right-hand man. Even in prison he moved up. So here he is. Well now, here we go. Everybody that heard it, Pharaoh and all of his servants that heard what Joseph had to say, they thought it was a good idea. How unusual is that in a government room? When was the last time a bunch of politicians got together and they all thought something was a good idea? But here it was. They all thought this was a good idea. Unanimous. Maybe the servants were just afraid to speak up against Pharaoh after he said he thought it was a good idea. Maybe, I don't know. But Pharaoh then asked his servant, is there anybody else like Joseph who has the Spirit of God in him? Joseph had something special and Pharaoh recognized it. This guy could do what none of the magicians and none of the wise men of Egypt could do. And he was down there in the dungeon. He was down there in the jail. But he had this talent. Well, nobody can come up with anybody better. Nobody thinks of anybody that's like Joseph. And so Pharaoh recognizes quite quickly, give him honor for his ability to lead his nation. He recognizes pretty quickly that there's nobody better than Joseph to run this operation that Joseph has just suggested. See, Joseph has got himself a job. He interviews real well. He got a good job here out of this. In fact, Pharaoh says because God has shown him all of these things, shown Joseph all of these things that were going to happen, he must be the guy to do it. He must be the guy we need to run this thing. And so Pharaoh puts Joseph in charge of his house in verse 40 and makes him second in command over the whole nation of Egypt. Well, that's a big step up, isn't it? Woke up in jail. Go to bed that night, second in command of the country. That'll make your head spin, won't it? See, that's what God's able to do. That's the kind of power that God has. Pharaoh puts Joseph over everything and everyone. He says, Joseph even has the power to make laws. And he says, by your word, you'll rule them with your word. They're going to have to do what you say do. If Joseph says jump, they're going to have to jump. Kind of almost sounds like the IRS, doesn't it? All that kind of power. Come take your house away from you if they want to. Joseph had that kind of power. He'd go take that 20%, and if somebody was resisting him, didn't want to give him, well, he'd just take it all if he wanted to. That's the kind of power that Pharaoh just gave him. Pharaoh says, only in the throne am I going to be any better than you. I'm still going to be on the throne, but you're going to have command over everybody else. And Pharaoh gives him the accoutrements to fill out the position. Gives him the gold ring. Gives him new garments. Gives him the gold chains to wear around his neck. Make him look like a real Egyptian Pharaoh kind of guy. But he's just second Pharaoh. He's vice Pharaoh. Like we have a vice president, I guess. But he's in this new position. Then Joseph gets to ride in the second chariot. And everyone has to bow down to him. Well, he's moved up, isn't he? Moving up in the world. You know, I have to wonder when I read this and see what all's happening to Joseph here. I have to wonder. In fact, verse 44 says, Pharaoh says, without you shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. He said, they can't even breathe without your permission. That's some authority right there. And I have to think, what kind of man is Joseph that with that power and that authority, remember Potiphar's wife? Boy, she could disappear. She could be publicly executed. But as far as we know, Joseph never went down that road. Joseph never tried to get back at Potiphar or his wife for anything that happened to him in their house. That's an amazing thing. Joseph is a man of integrity and character. Well, I tell you, there aren't a lot of men like him around today who, given those same set of similar circumstances, would not take that opportunity to have revenge on the person who had wrongly imprisoned them for over 2 years. Remember, it was 2 years from the time the baker and butler. So it was, you know, and he was there before them. So at more than 2 years, he was in jail and wrongly imprisoned. A lot of people want revenge after something like that. And if they were in a position of power to have it, they'd get it. See, Joseph shows us what a godly person does. Put the past behind us, move on to the future. He's got 7 years of famine coming to worry about. He doesn't have time to worry about what happened to him in Potiphar's house. Joseph's name gets changed. I've seen some indication his new name, which is an Egyptian name, Zaphnath-Paaneah. We named our dog that one time. We called him Z for short. But Zaphnath-Paaneah means something akin to a bringer of life or a life giver. Something of that nature. Which is a pretty appropriate name for the guy who saved your whole nation from this horrible famine that was coming. I guess that's a pretty good name for him. And he gets a wife. Gets one of the priest's daughters. The priests were high up in Egyptian society. In fact, we'll find that later on when all of these things, this 20% tax and all this and land confiscation and all the things that go along with it, when all that's happening, the priests get exempted. They get to keep their land. They don't have to abide by this ruling. So the priests were way up, upper echelon of Egyptian society, and Joseph gets to marry one of the priest's daughters. Asenath is her name. And so, he has a special situation. Well, this is all happening now when Joseph is 30 years old. It's been 13 years since the time when he ratted out two of his step-half-brothers about the fact that they weren't doing what they were supposed to do. He was 17 at that time. And that's when the indication was they started really hating him back then and before they sold him away. But it's been 13 years. He's had a crazy 13 years, hasn't he? Up and down, up and down. Sold, head of the household, falsely accused in prison, head of the prison, now this. It's been quite a ride. But here he is. Then down in verse 47, these 7 good years come on. And during these 7 years, it is so plentiful that the earth brought full by handfuls. I mean, there was just so much grain. In fact, they gathered that food. They laid it up in all the cities. Joseph gathered the grain. The King James says corn, but the seed and everything. He gathers it all up. It was as the sand of the sea. It was so much that he quit counting it because it was too much to count. You know, they didn't have computers and inventory control systems like we have now. They had to bag it all and count it up, and he just gave up counting it all. It was so much. It was too much to count. Started counting it by the barn full, or maybe the pyramid full over there in Egypt. But he, instead of counting, pounds or whatever they used as far as measurements, he couldn't count it all. Things were going real well. During this time, Joseph also gets to have his 2 sons. As far as we know, the only ones that he had, the only children he had as far as we know, may have had some daughters that weren't mentioned. Sometimes the daughters weren't. But Asenath and Joseph have 2 children. The one named Manasseh. Manasseh is the first one. And an indication is that Manasseh means forgetful or forgetting. Because he is able now to forget about all the bad things that have happened. Things are going well. And so Manasseh helps him to forget all the toil and all of the problems in his father's house that he had to deal with. And then Ephraim comes along in verse 52, the second son. He says, because God has caused me to be fruitful in the land of my affliction. And it means a fruitful or double fruitful even. And so we have Ephraim then being born. The 7 years of plentiful, the 7 years of plenty come to an end. And the 7 years of drought and famine, dearth, and dreary days are upon us. And it says that this drought, this famine, this whatever is causing this, it was in all the land. It was everywhere. It's a worldwide famine. At least in that known part of the world in their day. All the nations had to deal with this. And it says, but in the land of Egypt, there was bread. Why the land of Egypt? Why did God choose Pharaoh? Why not some other country somewhere else? Why not Ur of the Chaldees? Why not Syria? Why not some other nation? Why not Ethiopia? Why Egypt? Famine was over all the face of the earth. Now when all the land of Egypt got hungry, because remember the drought affected them, they ran out of their crops. And so, when they ran out, they cried to Pharaoh for food, for bread. And Pharaoh said, go to Joseph and do whatever he tells you to do. And so Joseph finally, now the drought's here, and Joseph opens up these storehouses that he has prepared. Well, I tell you, how much can you charge for a glass of water if you're in the desert and you're the only one that's got a glass of water? How much can you charge for a loaf of bread if there's a drought all over the whole world, a famine throughout the whole world, and you're the only one that's got some bread? You want to know why Egypt ruled the world for a couple thousand years? This is it right here. This is why Egypt became an international powerhouse. I mean, they ruled the world. Really, I mean, they had power. They had wealth beyond imagination, so much so that even today, even as wealthy as our society is, we're still astonished by things like King Tut. When they open his tomb, wow, the treasures! How rich he was! We live in the richest nation in the world, and we're amazed at how rich they were. That's wealth. And it all started right here, because everybody came to Joseph. They opened the storehouses, they sold to all the Egyptians. The famine got worse in the land of Egypt, but then all the countries came to Egypt and to Joseph to buy food because the famine was all over all the land and it was so bad. That's quite a position to be in. You're the only ones in the world that have it. Well, that's something. It's not over yet, though. The best part is yet to come. God did not do this to make Egypt rich or powerful. That was a byproduct. That was just one of the things that happened because of what he did. That wasn't his purpose. He didn't care if Egypt was the most powerful nation in the world or not. That wasn't what he was out to do. Remember, what God's out to do is to bring reconciliation. He's bringing a Savior into the world. Well, how does this famine and him warning Pharaoh so that they can store up the grain and so that Egypt has all of this food when the famine comes, how is that going to bring the Savior to the world? Well, we'll find out next time. To be continued. You know, do we, like Joseph, give God the credit? Or do we try to take some for ourselves sometimes? Do we recognize God's blessings? Do we accept the good and the bad that comes? Do we look to God when times get tough? Or do we try to figure it out on our own? Joseph's a good example for us because he followed God, because he trusted in God, because he believed in God. Truly, Pharaoh was right when he said, "Is there a man like Joseph in whom the Spirit of God dwells?" What about us? When people see us, when they see the way we treat each other and the way we treat other people and the way we behave and the way we do things, would they ever think to say that? Hey, there's somebody. Man, the Spirit of God really lives in that person. See, that's what we're supposed to be as Christians. We're supposed to be the light of the world. We're supposed to reflect the light of God to everybody around us. If you are not doing that, you need to make some changes in your life. You need to start being the mirror that you ought to be, the reflection of God, the reflection of Jesus Christ, so that the world can see Him through us. If you have a need to respond this evening to the invitation, please do so as we stand and as we sing.